From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Last weekend, the box office bowed to the newest Marvel comic turned blockbuster. The Avengers pits a group of superheroes against their greatest villain yet, their own super egos.
I thought I didn't qualify.
Apparently I'm, what is it, volatile, self-obsessed,
and don't play well with others.
We're not a team. We're a time bomb.
Robert Downey Jr. there as Iron Man Tony Stark and Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner, also known as the Hulk, both sounding like they're ready for an intervention. Robin Rosenberg is here to help. She's a superhero therapist whose analyses of comic book characters and Comic-Con superfans was profiled by Pacific Standard earlier this month. And she joins us now from a studio in Stanford, California. Robin, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks for having me.
Have you seen The Avengers yet?
I must confess that I did see it during the weekend.
Well, it's a good thing because we'd love you to go through a sort of speedy diagnosis of some of the principal characters. Are you willing?
I don't know about diagnoses, but a thumbnail psychological sketch.
Okay, profiles. Let's do that. First off, billionaire and genius Tony Stark, or Iron Man. Tell us about his psychological makeup.
Well, many people wonder whether he has a narcissistic personality disorder, but I think people who have that problem or that disorder are unrealistically full of themselves, and it's a question about whether he's realistically full of himself. He is, after all, a billionaire and incredibly brilliant inventor who creates, you know, new technologies left and right, and aside for that, you know, is Iron Man after all. So the fact that he's full of himself might be justified.
How about the God of Thunder, Thor?
That's a little confusing. having a god walking among men.
He's got to be a little full of himself, right?
Right, he's got to be a little, yes, absolutely. But
yeah, how can you say he has a god complex if he's a god?
Exactly. We're on the same page there. I actually think he's, in a sense, the least interesting. I think it's hard to be an interesting god unless you're capricious, and he, fortunately for humans, is not capricious. So he's a bit boring.
All right. We'll move on to someone more exciting. The scientist and I guess Marvel's equivalent of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Bruce Banner, who turns into the Hulk.
Exactly. The Hulk... basically, he really is someone with an alter ego, and the Hulk is traditionally like a 2-year-old, with anger management issues, and Bruce Banner's a really smart, mellow guy. He's not necessarily an alpha male in the way that the Norse god and the inventor are, but very nice guy and understated. Who really just tries to stay on an even keel and do the right thing. But sometimes his other self breaks through, which, you know, happens to all of us when we have some emotional dysregulation problems.
Maybe not in such a big way.
Right, and not so green.
And how about the super soldier Boy Scout, Captain America?
So that's actually, I think, the most interesting psychologically, in a sense, because he wasn't... buff, as we might say, before the serum. He was easy to overlook. He was small. He was puny in a time in the 1940s when that was really not very fashionable. So even though he's now looks really, really cool in his uniform and really strong, he's still that person that he was originally, just like someone who's heavy as a kid and loses weight as an adult still feels fat, or someone who grew up very poor and is rich still often feels poor. So I actually think that's kind of interesting piece of his makeup.
That sort of, you know, the 98-pound weakling might be more what we associate with a comic book reader in some cases.
Traditionally, that is true.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to another superhero. Here's a clip from Spider-Man 3. In this film, Peter Parker, he's in turmoil. Here he is in one of those good guy loses his moral compass scenes.
Everything okay here, Paul?
Take him out of here.
Let's go, sir.
Take your hand off of me.
Now.
Okay.
Hey,
stop! Peter, stop!
are you?
I don't know.
Oh, Peter Parker doesn't know who he is. I can't help but think, Robin Rosenberg, of that kind of Jungian archetype of the hero. In my memory, it's the one we want to project to the world. It's your ego on a quest to individualize the self and battle against the shadows of its own self. Is that what drives the superhero?
That's one way of framing it. I guess I like to think that superheroes in general, each have some ability. Sometimes it's an alien ability, sometimes it's a human ability, but they have a gift and they want to try to make use of it. They want to say, okay, I can do this, so what? Now, how do I live a meaningful and fulfilling life? And I think that's true in our world as well, and that's part of why we resonate with superheroes.
I'm talking about super psychology with California pop culture psychologist Robin Rosenberg. She's author of the forthcoming book, What's the Matter with Batman? An unauthorized clinical look under the mask of the Caped Crusader. Okay, I think you you tugged me a little earlier for maybe exhibiting a stereotype of your typical profile of those who are drawn to superhero comics. Is there a typical psychological profile for those who love superhero stories?
I don't think so. Superhero stories in some form or another have been with us for eons. I mean, stories about people battling, if we want to say evil, or villains or bad guys or people who perpetrate crimes have always been with us. And we look to the heroes to inspire us. I think the difference is that comic books per se tended to be in the realm of a subset of people, and the films are reaching a much wider audience. So the stories themselves, so there's a difference between the story and the medium. I think in film, it's able to reach an incredibly wide audience, but you have to have a good story. Mm. So there are many superhero films that didn't do particularly well at the box office, and I would say because those stories weren't psychologically rich enough. But when the story is taps into something really essential about human nature with which people can resonate, that's a blockbuster film. So the Avengers film, for instance, has... There's so many heroes that you can't really focus on any given character for a long period of time, but it's a film, it's an origin story about a team. Mm-hmm. It's about how to take a disparate group of people, most of whom are alpha males or female, who are used to kind of having their own way in their lives, to come together and try to figure out how to work together as a team, which means subverting their own desires to a given leader in the moment. And I think most of us in our work lives have to work with other people who come with their own baggage and history, and their experience is really different from ours. We may not like them, but we still have to work with them. And so I think that's part of what the Avengers film touches on that mm-hmm. reaches all of us, which is how do you work with people that you don't necessarily know or like or understand?
Well, it's not just the superheroes that you're interested. You also interview some of the elaborately costumed comic book fans that they're referred to as cosplayers at comic conventions. What are some of the reasons that your average cosplayer dresses up?
Ah, excellent question. Typically, so there are a bunch of different reasons, and there are different subgroups of people who dress up. It's called costume play, and it's more than just putting on the costume. It's kind of inhabiting the role of character. So it's of the character. So it's almost like an acting performance that's sustained over the course of the convention. It's often a social experience, so people will do it with friends. They may coordinate their costumes. They may not. They'll spend some time, even up to a year before a convention, fabricating and planning their costume, and then figuring out the role of the character and how to inhabit that. Sometimes it's a way for people to just have a hobby that combines many different aspects, because there are a lot of different aspects of cosplay leading up to the convention. The most interesting group of people are the people who are shy mm-hmm. in their regular lives, and who, when they're in costume. It's the one time when they can kind of really be a different person other than their shy self. And there's something about the costume that allows them to do that, which is kind of interesting. And then people who cosplay over years, what they start to do is to think, well, if they're going to go on a job interview, normally they tend to be, you know, shy and reserved, and they recognize that may not be the best thing for them in that situation. And so they say to themselves, well, how would I act if I were in costume? And then that's how they act on the job interview. So they kind of access this other part of themselves, this alter ego, if you will, that's normally not as available to them in their day-to-day lives. And the costume, or even thinking about the costume, allows them access to that way of behaving. And that's kind of cool, because in cognitive behavioral therapy, we often do ask people to try on behaving in a different way than they normally do. And the idea is that if you do it often enough, it becomes a part of you. And so that's what's happening for this group of cosplayers.
Well, I think our 10-minute version of the 50-minute hour is over, and I want to thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Virginia. It was great.
Robin Rosenberg, Palo Alto psychologist and author of the forthcoming The Psychology of Superheroes, and a regular columnist for Psychology Today. You can find links to her work and Spencer Ackerman's profile of Robin for the Pacific Standard at wordofmouthradio.org.